this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This is H.B. Kaltenborn speaking. Here in the nation's capital, there is anxiety and concern, but no outward sign of panic.
That caught me by surprise, too. I didn't expect that. Hey, this is UFOs Tonight. My name is Don Ecker, and you are listening to the Cable Radio Network. And you may be asking yourselves, why was Star Trek playing? Well, believe it or not, there is a crossover from Star Trek to UFOs, and I have them sitting right here in my studio this evening. Tonight, I am proud to introduce somebody that I met a number of weeks ago who has since become a friend, somebody that we have had some absolutely amazing discussions on the subject of unidentified flying objects and other things concerning this world we live in. A gentleman whom many of you have seen a number of years ago in the A-Team and much more recently playing Lieutenant Barclay on the Starship Enterprise on Star Trek The Next Generation, and my in-studio guest tonight, Mr. Dwight Schultz. Dwight, it's a pleasure having you in here.
Well, Don, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm a very lucky person, ladies and gentlemen, to be on this radio program.
And I think I hear the bridge beeping at us even as we speak.
Yes, I think I hear it.
Well, you know what? Tonight's program is being brought to all of you and me courtesy of the Triad Conference, March 26th and 27th in San Diego. Is there evidence for extraterrestrial visitation? Now, this is how you can find out more about it. Well, Dwight, here we are sitting down here in the bowel of the Cable Radio Network. I've got your resume in front of me that you had your folks send over. After doing, and there's a point to all this madness, but after doing somebody like a character like Howling Mad Murdoch, suddenly to be thrust into an American icon. I mean, this has got to be a trip. You saved NBC back on the A-Team, and today you're saving the galaxy. I mean, is there no end to all this?
To my fortune, to my good fortune. Well, Star Trek, I've done, I think, five, and they've asked me to do the final episode. I've been lucky enough to do things in my life that I've wanted to do, and I've always been a Star Trek fan since its inception. And I got to work with Whoopi Goldberg, and she was a regular, you know, on Star Trek. And I told her what a fan I was of that show, and she said, "But you got to be on it! You got to be on it!" And they called me, and I was very, very, very fortunate to walk the deck of the Star Trek Enterprise.
Well, we have today apparently seemingly a schism between sci-fi fans and people that study and research and chase unidentified flying objects. I don't know why. It would seem to me that there is a natural crossover there. On the one hand, we're talking about fictional aliens, and on the other hand, possibly very real ones. How does somebody like you develop an interest in this subject?
Well, I've had a love-hate relationship with the subject for 30 years. First of all, I don't think you can be a truly intelligent individual and not believe that there's life out there. You can't have been listening to the news reports. You can't have talked to individuals who have seen craft in our skies and not come away thinking that there is something there. I don't know what it is. I'm not quite sure what it is, but too many intelligent people have seen too many very, very specific things flying in our skies, not suns, not moons, not stars, but defined aircraft moving through the skies. And I say, I've talked to them. And we are either looking at one of the greatest examples of mass hallucination and psychosis, or these people are seeing something.
Well, that raises a... This is
either
a good
way,
time to raise
a very interesting. Either way, the answer to either of those questions is fascinating. One of the fascinating questions of the 20th century.
You starred in a film a couple of years ago with Paul Newman called Fat Man and Little Boy.
Correct.
Playing the role of Dr. Robert Oppenheimer.
Correct.
The guys that built the atomic bomb. Now, this is one of the first things that we talked about.
Yes. And go ahead.
Well, a number of weeks ago, and ladies and gentlemen, I hope I'm not going to cause Dwight any embarrassment, but I found out that he's been listening to this show for over a year.
Indeed.
You heard me a number of weeks ago when one night I went on a rampage and did what I call my soapbox.
Yes. I appreciate that.
Well, you're one of the few that did. What we were talking about, one of the things that I talked about that night were excesses committed by the government of the United States with the Atomic Energy Commission on civilians that were, without their knowledge, irradiated.
Yes.
By lethal, in most cases, lethal radiation.
They were injected with plutonium. Some people were injected with plutonium. And these experiments went on during the Manhattan Project. And there were people who were aware of it. And it was brought out in the film. But it did not create a stir back then. I didn't see any eyebrows raised in the news.
This was addressed in the film.
Yes.
But yet you told me a lot of this had been dropped on the cutting
room
floor.
Well, a lot of it had been cut out of the film. The subplot. It was a subplot. And Roland Jaffe, the director, had gone to there was a lot of research. I mean, they had a book of proofs for this experimentation, but most of it did not find its way into the film. I was never given any explanations as to why, but the accusation was there. But the subplot, the films of people vomiting, of the actual scenes where people were injected, a lot of that was not there in the final cut, but the implication was there.
Well, you know, just this past week, as a matter of fact, I was carrying on a dialogue with somebody from a very skeptical, well, this individual calls it skeptical, I call it debunking
yes.
viewpoint over
right.
the computer networks. Mm-hmm. And basically what he was saying was, well, even though our government would, you know, cover up excesses like the AEC excesses and many other things that we could sit here and name, like Watergate, Vietnam, etc. What makes you think that they would cover up unidentified flying objects? To me, which this, you know, the thrust of his argument made no sense to me. Of course they would, because as far as I can see, the national security implications are phenomenal.
You have to put everything into perspective. You have Tonya. And she's on television for a month or two, and you have this excess, and you have that excess, and it comes on, and the news organizations, they play it up for everything that they possibly can for its month run, and then the story runs out, and it's gone. But as I said, I think I said to you, imagine a news broadcast in which you have, ladies and gentlemen, the United States announced today that it had in its possession an unidentified flying object, an actual flying saucer, and they have the remains of four aliens. Now, on to the weather. This affects every single thing in life. It first of all affects every scientist who has ever said, these are billions and billions of lies. Those scientists who have said, it's not going to happen in our lifetime, it's going to affect them. They are going to be wrong. Science is going, the scientists that have come out and have said, the possibilities, it's just not going to happen. They're going to be wrong. No one is going to turn off their television. They're not going to say, I'm tired of hearing about this other life form that's out there that has been able to come to our planet, to invade our airspace. And we, the common people, really didn't know about it en masse, and our government was hiding it from us. That sort of information would change religion. It would change literature, where we came from. It would change all of science. No one would know what was stable and what wasn't. If we can be kept in the dark about that for such a long time, then what is everything? What is solid?
Well, now let me break in here very quickly.
Yes.
And I've given this speech before, and I'm going to distill it. But it has never ceased to amaze me when people say that The idea of star travel is fantastic, and it only belongs in the realm of science fiction because Einstein basically limited our universe and the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles per second. Now, our universe is between 15 and 20 billion years in age. That's current scientific thought. The planet Earth and our solar system is somewhere between 4.5 and 5. So we're talking about the Earth being anywhere only 1/3 to 1/4 of the age of the entire universe, which gives us a lot of room for other civilizations to have come and gone. Now, it was only 500 years ago when Europeans rediscovered the New World, Columbus, and it took them months to get here. Today, we do that same trip in a couple of hours we have different technology. Now, how can we limit what another civilization out there somewhere may have available to itself?
Well, not only that, Don, but why is it always... Why do we always presume that they are coming from someplace and they have to go back? Why is that always the presumption? You know, we have gypsies on this planet of ours, this small planet that we... People who are nomads, they migrate, they move forever. They move from one spot to the next, and they keep going in a circle because the planet is basically circular. But... Why do we confine ourselves to this concept that they have to go back? What if they've been traveling in their own enormous spaceship for a billion years? Perhaps they're on the outskirts of our solar system. Perhaps they're very, very nearby. And I don't think anybody has said that it's impossible to travel perhaps half the speed of light. In fact, Martin Gardner, in his book, The Relativity Explosion, says it's quite probable. It's a possibility. It's not something that we should put out of our minds, traveling at half the speed of light.
Well, there's certainly other ways, too, that we could...
That we thought of. But the point is that if we are being visited, the concept of them having to come from galaxies far, far away I don't accept that as being in concrete.
Well, that's something, too, that's always... I've been discouraged by when a number of people said, well, you know, what if they've come from a galaxy far, far away? Well, why would they have to? Our own galaxy is pretty bloody big.
Yes.
If we could travel the speed of light going just lengthwise, it would take us approximately 100,000 years. Now, speaking of time now, you were just telling me, and this was something when we had dinner this evening, you were telling me about a
Don't
skull.
Don't believe this. I did not have dinner with this man. It's not true. He's lying. He's trying to incorporate himself into my personality, and it's not true. We didn't eat. Go ahead.
I'm going to be nice, or I'll have you do face before the show's over.
I can't do anything when I'm asked to do it.
You were just talking about a skull that
yes.
had been
I just
found.
Heard this. Yes, it was on Paul Harvey. And I've been looking for it in the newspapers. Paul Harvey, by the way, is one of the few individuals who, when there are UFO sightings or strange anomalous sightings, he reports it seriously, by the way, for anybody who's interested. Yes, he announced that they found a skull in China that was 200,000 years old, which changes our perspective. I mean, scientists don't like this news. I mean, it does cause problems.
Well, you're talking about a Homo sapiens.
Homo sapien, yes, human. I mean, so that... Now, of course, we have to wait to look at the newspaper stories and the analysis and the carbon dating and the new dating and the radioactive datings and make sure that this is all true. But I'm assuming, because usually he's fairly accurate. If this is true, then we have to change our assumptions about when... And when we evolved, or how we evolved, or if we evolved at all. I think that was the point of his news broadcast. Did we evolve, or did we just come here, or were we made here, created here? Did we just happen? Were we made, fashioned what we are today? And I think...
Well, even the Bible states that mankind, in fact, was fashioned.
Yes, exactly right. And historical document, it's very interesting. It's one of those things that you cannot put out of your head. I don't think that all of the great religious writers were numbskulls. I think the stories that you see have some validity. And, I mean, I have always, the Zachariah Sitchin books, I've read them, and I think that there is a great deal of truth to them. It seems sensible to me that if we as a species are spending so much effort, so much money into creating ourselves, or should I say recreating ourselves, our electronic brains are developing to the, we're now at the Pentium, I believe.
The personal PC.
Yeah, the PCs. We're creating, we are now looking at neural net, trying to recreate neural networks the way we think. We are constantly, it's like a puzzle. It's like we have been given this extraordinary puzzle, because everything we do is a puzzle. We have our tests are puzzles, we do crossword puzzles, we figure out this puzzle, we figure out this game, this murder mystery, it's all puzzles. And it's almost as if somewhere buried inside of us we've been given this puzzle. Build yourself. Recreate yourself. Let's see. When you get to that point, and here we are, we're doing it. We are fashioning, we're trying to refashion ourselves. Well, if we are doing this, why wouldn't it be most probable that a more intelligent species long ago did the same thing and was a little further on? It's not a ridiculous thought. It's a naturally intelligent thought.
Well, you know, there are a lot of theories, of course, about the planet, about humankind. One theory I read, and I'm trying to think of, well, I think at least part of this was also mentioned in some of Sitchin's works, that the people that ended up here on this planet in some cases were the reprobates, the bad guys, mm-hmm. the nonconformists that ended up inhabiting planet Earth. And it certainly would give one pause to think about this if you take a look at the daily newspaper or the news. But what is it, do you feel, that makes humankind so short-sighted? There are so many people that are so incredibly short-sighted about many things. I mean, we can take a look at the HRMS, the SETI program, which Congress cut the funds off of. It's like we're intentionally trying to limit our knowledge.
Well, I think it has to do with how our lives being so short. You see, we perceive our consciousness to really extend only the limit of our lives, which is for a man, it's anywhere, you know, usually between 60 and 80 years. And we think of the universe really in terms of that short period of time. We have a hard time thinking about the generations to come. And I think we are inherently selfish as a species. So this, the ability to think long range, the ability to look generations, is not something that comes easy. I think you have to be a very, very generous and big individual to say, look, and who does? I mean, very few people do it. We, I think, are fortunate in that our forefathers and foremothers seem to be less selfish than we are. Somehow, even the Constitution of the United States seemed to be a long-range program. We don't see many of those anymore. But it is, time is speeding up. Things are being compressed into shorter and shorter times. And everything is, news and information is coming so fast, and it's got to be done today. It's got to be done this year. If I don't see it now, then I'm not going to believe it. We forget what happened 3 years ago. History is obsolete.
Well, just taking a look at what's been going on within our own government is a perfect case in point.
Let me give you a great example of this. When I did Fat Man and Little Boy, we did a press junket. We had to go to Canada. And you meet many members of the press, and you sit there in a room for 14 hours or 12 hours or whatever it is, and you do interviews. And it was a startling experience for me, having done that film, because the reporters were all asking me questions that were scientifically based and ethically based. And here I was, I'm an actor, right? And I did Oppenheimer, and I didn't even do Oppenheimer like Oppenheimer. And I could have done it. I could have, because the man spoke in a very, now I'm doing Alexander King, but he had no, but Oppenheimer spoke in a very extraordinary way. It was very affected. And he used the word sweet frequently. And he would raise his voice and modulate it, and he would come down, and he would control you with it, almost in a. And interestingly enough, when he spoke in a large hall, he spoke like Joe McCarthy. He had a kind of ringing sound to it. He did these things, and I don't know why I'm getting onto this, but I couldn't do that in the movie. But anyway, they were asking me questions as if I were a scientist at this meeting, and I started acting the role. And they were all anti the use of the bomb. I don't think I met one reporter who indicated to me that he thought that the use of the atomic weapon was anything but an immorality. And I happened to have a different feeling about it. And so I asked them all simple questions. My only historical question, I'd say, well, how many people died in World War II? Can you tell me? How many people were dead
when the Eastern European Jews came running over here, banging on the doors of the Pentagon, the War Department, saying, you've got to build this bomb. How many were dead? How many died at the end of them? Well, of all the people that I talked to, there was only one individual who came close. Usually it was 10 million, 15 million. To tell someone there were 60 million people dead at the end of that war. Can you think about it? I think the population of this country at that time was, what, 140?
Yeah. So just the Russians lost about 25 million.
But the concept of this carnage is inconceivable. You cannot really conceive of that many dead. But the need to build, to stop, was so great. Our little petty lives today, you know, it's so easy to pass judgment, but how many of those people would have had the courage to actually step in and do something about it? But they didn't. Their historical perspective was what I was trying to say before, is that we've forgotten history. We have no history. And as things speed up, our knowledge is being compressed into a smaller and smaller time frame, and we're forgetting the past, and we're not looking at the future. Everything is becoming now, instant. And so I think it's as technologically advanced as our society is, you know, we have to stop a little bit and start to hold on to our libraries.
All right, my name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. My guest this evening is Mr. Dwight Schultz, known on screen and the tube in many different roles. Most recently, Lieutenant Barclay of Star Trek, The Next Generation. How come you got demoted? You were a captain on the A-Team.
I know. but I'm the only nerd who was ever on the Star Trek Enterprise.
We're going to be back after these words. Starting after the half hour, we're going to take your phone calls. So stay tuned. More's coming. Boy, I tell you, if they didn't know any better, they'd think they were listening to Talk Trek with Joyce Mason on Friday evening. This is Don Ecker, the show, UFOs Tonight. You are listening to the Cable Radio Network. And incidentally, I want to take a second, Dwight, to thank Joyce Mason and the folks at Talk Trek, because it's my understanding that last night she mentioned your appearance here on UFOs Tonight. And I think she'd like you to do a guest spot with them.
Well, I will.
Well, you're in
that
demand,
very
buddy.
Sweet of
you're
I will.
In demand.
I will.
Hey, this show is about UFOs. Now, if you heard last week's program, you know I was not very nice to the folks that did the special on Fox Network, Encounters. Out of all the recent UFO stuff that I have seen, I felt that they had taken several of the worst cases possible to bring this before the American public. Now, I just found out that the third story on that show was hoaxed. Not only was the Karp case, the Guardian case, hoaxed, and there are serious questions about what really happened in Long Island, but this right here, and can you all see that out there? I got this paper right here.
That's Rush Limbaugh does that stuff.
I have a faxed letter from a Puerto Rican researcher by the name of Wilson Sosa, who informed me that the primary Puerto Rican abductee witness, a gentleman by the name of, let's see, his last name is Rivera, his first name, Amari Rivera. He was the guy with the photograph of the Tomcat jet and the UFO, hoaxed the photograph, and his alleged abduction story he also admitted to hoaxing. He took a model Tomcat airplane, put a couple of hubcaps together, had his flying saucer in the airplane, and voila, there it is. Fox, three strikes, you're out.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's why you're lucky to have this program.
Well, thank you. We do not smile lightly at schlock. You know, that's what's so amazing about this entire field. In 50 years, Dwight, 50 years, how many journalists have taken a true, or media people, have taken a true investigative look? Can you recall anybody?
There are very few. I had one. There was a fellow named Lou Corbin in Baltimore.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
On WFBR. God bless him. And Lou Corbin was very serious about the subject. That's about it.
that I can think of, very few that I would call critically enthusiastic about the subject. In other words, they were serious, they took it seriously, and they followed it through. But they didn't jump at every sensational story. They waited, but they said it's important to look at it. And they particularly found it important as to do what you just did, and that is when there was a hoax, because there's nothing more infuriating than somebody who steals your life's time, your blood, that actually makes you believe something is real when it is not. They're charlatans. I mean, there's nothing more. It's like someone coming in and stealing your furniture. But there are very few. I mean, when was the last time you've seen anything on page 4 of the New York Times or page 4 or 5 of the Los Angeles Times? It never occurs. And you know, and I know, if you are interested in this subject, that it is an area that should be examined. Because it's just there are things going on. What they are, we can't say for sure. We have opinions. But the fact that the press, and it's the press in particular that ridicules this subject, and the military.
But they've been conditioned.
The press has been conditioned, but the military does it. But the scientific community, on whole, when it's not on the television tube, does not ridicule this subject. I'm not saying that they all believe in it. I'm not saying that they agree that there are extraterrestrial craft. But on whole, when you talk to somebody off camera, someone on the side, and bring this subject up, they are quite thoughtful. And I'm talking about some brilliant minds. I've been very fortunate because of the entertainment industry. I mean, why I should be able to, I don't know. But you just do come into contact with people in all walks of life, particularly in the scientific community. And they raise their eyebrows, and they're serious when you talk about it. I mean, they don't laugh at you. And I think you have to, early, if you went to college or high school and were ever attracted to debate, forensic debate, you found out very early on that ridicule is one of the great tools of the debater and the individual interested in the argument. And he who argued and won first place for the negative won first place for the affirmative, because the interesting thing was the argument, not the truth. Ridicule is a tool.
You have a problem. If no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
Boy, you're probably wondering where I got all that music. Dwight, you recognize her?
Oh, I do.
Howling Man Murray. You know, I'll tell you. Now, this is, honest to God, I did not usually watch A-Team when it was first run. And I'll tell you why.
Neither did anybody in NBC.
Well, it saved NBC.
Didn't watch it. No one ever has. I've never met anybody in NBC who has actually watched
it. I did not go into it with the right attitude. It was kind of a parody, and you know, when I saw somebody shooting a gun, people went down and they bled.
That's right.
And I thought, oh, come on, you know, these guys shoot a million bullets every week and nobody ever gets hit. A million bullets. But on a more serious note, how did you discover this particular show? And I'm quite honestly, yes, when you told me that you were tuning in every week, I found that amazing.
Well, it started, it was a little over. Well, and I can't remember. When were you on Larry King?
I've been on a number of times.
Well,
the last time was
the space
June
show
of,
with Oberg.
Yeah, June of 92? Was it 92? 92 or 93?
Well, I suppose that was the first time I saw you. And I jumped out of my chair. And I said, who's that? Who's that? Because you were so incredibly aggressive. And, you know, you just don't see people who are in ufology being aggressive when they know they're right. And I saw the videotape, which I thought was fantastic and stunning, and was Oberg was a little nonplussed by it, and I thought his explanations were not very good. And I was very impressed.
Well, he was very upfront. I just went there to sell magazines.
Well, he was, but I mean, I just didn't buy what he was explaining and what I saw. In my ever-ending search for some kind of rational discussion on this subject, I saw UFO Magazine in Bernie's bookstore, Bernie's newsstand, in Studio City, which I frequent, and there was UFO magazine. And I normally, my hand would go up and it would come back, up and back, and I go, ooh, but he'll see me take this. And I picked it out, and I said, no, I'm going to get out I'm a hi-fi buff, so I got my hi-fi magazine, put it on top, and almost as if it was pornography, right? And I put them down, and of course, he looked at it. I went, I'm just perusing it. And I bought it. And lo and behold, there was a very, very intelligently well-written editorial note. And I mean, I couldn't believe, first of all, I was reading the whole thing. And I got to the bottom of it. I said, that was very well written. And it was a criticism. It was a criticism of the industry, the UFO industry. And I thought, well, that's fascinating. And I was stunned by the writing. Vicki Cooper's writing, and by the intelligent, rational way that the subject was handled. Magazine of extraordinary about speculation, very clear, but there were no hoaxes being supported. And I just breathed a sigh of relief. And then, lo and behold, there was this advertisement for a radio program, and there was your photograph. And I was fortunate enough in Central California to have a satellite dish. Got the transponder and the satellite and started listening. And it was like this weight had been lifted off my shoulder, because here was somebody who, there was no bull. And he called a spade a spade. And it was about something that I thought was fascinating. A subject that I was fascinating. And literally, I mean, you really feel like you're all alone. And we were just talking at the break that there is so much snake oil in this subject, for whatever reason, that you see that boat out there in the river, and by the time you get to it, boy, you're so sticky, you just turn around and go back to the river. And this, we're very, very fortunate to have a radio program like this. And
well, you say there's a lot of snake oil. I think one of the reasons, Dwight, is that there's no school to go to. I mean, if you want to be a dentist and you want to fix people's teeth, you want to be a health professional, you go to school. If you want to be a policeman, you go to the police academy. If you want to be a lawyer, you go to law school. UFOs, they're, you know, anybody can put a shingle on their house.
That's right. And people are out to make a buck. By scaring you, by threatening you, by becoming a center of attention, getting a news camera down because you saw something. And there indeed are a lot of hoaxes. And it's, as I say, it's infuriating to me. Every time I have in the past got excited to buy a news report and gone to buy a book, or, I mean, I felt raped sometimes. I mean, it's over. I mean, exaggerating. But you do. You just say, my God, and you throw it, and you say, I'm not going to get involved in it anymore. But you make a difference because you ferret that out, and I can listen to you, and I have great respect for you and the magazine. And I say, we're very fortunate.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me ask you this. We were talking a week or so ago about some of the different people over the years, I mean, very important people that have reported seeing something, being courageous enough to come out and talk about it. And one of the names that came up was former President of the United States, Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
Now, I told you that Carter has since, from what I found out, has disavowed his sighting.
Yes. And
but you were fortunate to hear Jimmy Carter when he was on a local radio program here in Los Angeles.
Michael Jackson, right. And again, you see, I don't forget.
Now here's a point. Some of the people in the media. Now, Michael Jackson, who is British,
right, has a very good program.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, talked about this case with President Carter. But yet, just a few months later, he had Carl Sagan on there, and he totally ridiculed the subject.
Yeah.
That was fascinating what you said.
Yes, he had President. Actually, the program that where I, and I taped this because I thought it would be instructive later, and I think it is now that he has recanted, if in fact he has, he was asked whether he had seen a UFO, and he described it as a very well-defined, bright object that was bluish, and he was with 25 other people. It came very close to them, turned to an orangish color, and then moved off to the west.
And when he got home, his wife said, oh, he was very excited, very excited. He really, you know, was really something. And Michael Jackson asked him, well, are you familiar with Project Blue Book? And Carter said, no, I don't know Blue Book, but I do know that there's an Air Force investigation on the subject. this was, of course, you know, there is no, I'm not aware of Blue Book, but I'm aware that there's an Air Force investigation on the subject, and it was, they stopped the tape there. And
now, what year was this?
I believe this was around 1990. Now, Stanton Friedman was on the program, so he would know.
But the Air Force, according to what they say, they stopped in 69.
They're not investigating. My gosh. My own Air Force is lying to me. But at any rate, about 6 months, 9 months later, Michael Jackson had Carl Sagan on his program. And there's a point to this, ladies and gentlemen. And Carl Sagan came on, and a caller called in and asked about the possibilities of alien life forms visiting our planet and flying around in our skies in disks. And Sagan said, don't be silly. Michael Jackson said, quite pointedly, yes, I want to say this. Why is it, I'm not going to do his accent, I can do a British accent, but I can't do Jackson's voice, but he said, why is it that the only people who ever see these things, and this is almost an exact quote, it burned in my brain, are half-drunk, off-duty policemen on the banks of the Mississippi, and single mothers coming home from the Pillsbury Bake Off. And Sagan said, exactly. He said, of course, they're never seen by more than three people at one time. Have you ever noticed he sounds a lot like Percy Dubtonsis? But the thing was this, that here he had, Jackson had the President of the United States, whom he admires greatly, on his program, who said, I, with 25 other people, saw this. And 6 months later, that translates to half-drunk, off-duty policemen or just single women. And yes, and it's never seen by more than three people. Slap each other on the back, onto the next subject. The point is that his belief system cannot be changed.
We're gonna follow that up, Dwight, but let me... I don't want to interrupt you when you're on a roll, but let me pay some bills here.
Yes, sir.
Hey, look, March 26th and 27th. In Southern California, especially for all you folks in the Southern California area and points further east and north. If you have been wanting to come to a place where there's not a lot of schlock, but there's some genuine research and investigation on one of your favorite subjects, unidentified flying objects, if you'd like to come out and even see me, this is how you can do it. Because is there evidence for ET visitation? I'd like to see you down there, and it's just going to be in a couple of weeks from now, March 26th and 27th. And if you didn't catch that, don't be shy. You can call us at UFO Magazine. We'll fill you in. Now, back to tonight's show. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs. Tonight, my in-studio guest, Mr. Dwight Schultz, film star of both the big screen and the small screen in your living room each evening. And if you'd like to get involved in tonight's conversation, here's what you do. If you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, the live. Dwight, we're back. Were you still on a roll?
Well, I'm out of the closet now. Everyone knows that, I believe. And I want... Well, this is another thing that I wanted to say. That one of the reasons, again, this is such a find... for those of us who want to believe, it's very, very, as I am, I mean, I openly admit that, it's very important to be very super critical, because the first thing you want to do is jump at some sighting, someone saying, I've seen something. But I have become, in a sense, super critical about most of the events, the anecdotal events in UFO literature, simply because I so much want to believe. And there is no, again, this is it, folks. This radio program, this magazine, other than this is it. This is where we belong.
Well, this is one of the reasons I think that the field, the UFO research field, has suffered so greatly in the last how many years? Because there have been so many people that have gone from researching to advocacy for a particular...
It's a disaster.
Let's go to Chicago. What do you say? We've got Sean calling in from Chicago, who's joining us on satellite. Good evening, Sean. This is Don. What's on your mind?
Well, I'd just like to say it's a great show tonight.
Well, thank you. Wait, is this Sean or Carl?
Sean.
Oh, okay. Well, you sounded like Carl Sagan there.
Sorry about that. No. Don't mean to scare you. Have you noticed on the media a lot lately, they seem to be talking about it a lot more, the subject in general.
Mm-hmm.
And even on Popular Science this month, it's got Dreamland on the cover. And it's got an article on that. Have you checked that out yet? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that I think is going to point a lot of people toward that area, a place where I don't think necessarily the government wants people to look, Dwight.
But they ridiculed, that article ridiculed the concept of UFOs. Maybe they should have, but it wasn't, it was mostly about the government secrecy and the concept that we had super secret airplanes there. It wasn't, the UFO angle was ridiculed.
Yeah, they mentioned it, but then, like, stomped it out right away. But it was mentioned, you know.
Well, it was great just to see it covered, because it was brought to the attention of the mass media by the UFO community, I think. In fact, I saw something on CNN about it today. They had the
Popular Science thing?
No, the Area 51, the military is they want to preclude the mountaintops.
Yes,
around.
Yes.
And
yes.
They covered that on CNN. They had they covered that the hearing, and there was a picture of a military figure sitting there, smirking. You know, we're gonna get it. We're gonna get that man. We're gonna get that one. We're gonna get that one. You ain't gonna have nothing.
Yeah.
What are our intrepid UFO investigators going to do then? I mean, they can't go out to White Sides anymore and climb up there and look down.
Well, that article worked out nicely because on Unsolved Mysteries last week, they had a thing on Dreamland and showed some videotapes and everything that people had gotten from there. So, you know, that kind of adds fuel to the fire, I guess you could say. And also, have you ever heard Dan Aykroyd on your show?
No, I haven't.
Because he was on Dave Letterman a few nights ago.
Right. Do you have Dan's telephone number?
No, I don't.
Yes, I heard about that. I heard he was serious about.
As a matter of fact, he was Dwight. He was waving this book.
Yeah, the first thing he did was gave Dave a copy of Above Top Secret.
Above Top Secret. Yeah,
indeed. Well, it's good to know that there's someone else out there at least being in this business, being serious about it, because there are too many people who have been affected. There are too many people who have had their lives ruined, who are victims, in a sense, of their sightings. And it's a very serious subject, should be taken seriously. And our government should not be involved in creating more unhappiness.
You're absolutely correct. It's something that, well, over the years, it's ruined many lives. And even today, there are people that dare not talk about the subject in the workplace, and wherever it is they work, because they're immediately branded as that nutcase
that's
chasing little green men.
Airline pilots in particular.
Absolutely. Sean, I want to thank you.
Thank you.
For your call. We've got some other calls waiting, and we're going to have to move along. But hey, keep those eyes to the sky.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to Owensboro, Kentucky. We've got Mike on joining us on satellite. Good evening, Mike.
Hello, Don.
Hey, how's it going?
It's crow eating time, Don.
Okay.
This Puerto Rican thing, I was just talking to you about that the other day.
Yes, you were.
I'm having to eat crow and back up.
Did I not say?
Yes, you did.
There are things in the wind. Yes.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Well, you know, that's the problem, and I think that the entire research community could have been saved this embarrassment, Mike, if the people that did the Encounters program, the Berkeley Group,
sure. The
same people that did sightings, and it was basically run into the ground because nobody wanted to do it right. They wanted to do it schlocky and put ghosts and sea monsters and, you know, slime coming out of the walls instead of good UFO research. And unfortunately, they got egg in their face now. Three stories that they featured, and all of them are down the tubes.
You know, it's disgusting, and the sad thing about it is early on, before they got into that, we're having one of the people from Fox call and talk to me a little bit.
Who was that?
I can't remember the lady's name right now, but it's probably a good thing.
Well, you know, they had our number, and of course I knew those people from when I consulted when they were doing sightings, and unfortunately I had a disagreement with the executive producer, and see what happens?
Sure.
They went to hell.
Right.
I don't know what to say, Mike.
All right, I have a question for Dwight.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Your character on Star Trek,
Yes.
Isn't that the same character you played, if I'm not mistaken, on As the World Turned?
I wasn't on As the World Turned, but I look so good. I mean, I'm so good at impersonation. You well, thought you I was. No, I was never on the World
Turned. Okay, I may be mistaking you for another one.
There you've got me all embarrassed.
Well, all little gray men look alike.
There was a character on As the World Turned who also played by the same name on Star Trek.
Steve Barclay.
Barclay. Yes.
Barclay.
But he didn't stammer the way Barclay's. Don't tell me another actor's done that.
All right, now that's straight.
That's honest.
You're not embarrassed again.
No, don't be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed. No, don't be. Thank you for asking.
Okay, Mike, I think we're just about, Renee is sitting over here in the corner kicking me in my bad leg, saying that it's time to do a commercial. We got to run, buddy.
Keep up the good work.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Oops, no, wait a minute. Is this damn thing working or not? Okay.
It's all yours.
Video Dave's UFO Audio Video Clearinghouse.
Oh, I get, and you're there at the office, and I know you've gotten calls. We get calls all the time asking us where there is going to be another UFO symposium, conference, two-day, three-day event.
Absolutely.
Where people can go. Well, guess what? Especially if you are in the Southern California area, well, actually anywhere, because you can fly practically anywhere now on an airplane. I don't think they're shooting them down or anything right now inside the CONUS, are they?
No.
Continental U.S., okay.
No.
I wasn't sure.
It's a safe flight.
The A-Team. I've seen some airplanes get knocked down.
No. Those are helicopters. Never shoot a fixed wing. No.
Well, by golly.
We don't make them anymore.
What if you could say UFOs, flying saucers? Would you shoot at those?
If I could see one, I would shoot one, yes.
Well, here's your chance. That was it. Hey, March 26th and 27th, is there evidence for extraterrestrial visitation? Now, John Lear thinks they're here to eat our face off. I personally don't subscribe to that. But you can find out more about it in San Diego. And if you call this number, they're going to tell you how you can get there. Area codes, Sky Ambrose, George Knapp, you know, he's been on this program a few times. And, geez, I don't know, there's going to be a bunch of people there. It's going to be a good time. 2 days, all the UFOs you can handle. 417. All right, we are. They're going to me. Why are they doing this? Now, that was. Which is a great time. Now, that's an A-bomb explosion. That's an A-bomb explosion. Now, this is a great time to mention this. A lot of those guys that were involved in the Manhattan Project ultimately, in one way or another, got involved in UFO research. Ed Condon, the guy that did the Condon whitewash, University of Colorado. You know, we had a very interesting piece of information crop up. Do you know that in 1947-48, Condon came under scrutiny from the House of Un-American Activities?
No, I didn't.
Yep. And which placed his security clearance in jeopardy. Years later, when he was offered to take over the report that Congress authorized, which became the University of Colorado thing, they rushed that through because Dick Nixon was ready to take office. They wanted to have this Condon Committee thing completely cleaned up before Nixon took over because, as we all know, Dick Nixon had a long memory. Condon was considered an enemy of Nixon. He was one of those left-wing pinkos. Nixon, back from his communist baiting days in the late 40s, didn't like him. And, you know, there can be a real strong push for a UFO cover-up just from that angle. That's amazing, isn't it?
He had a long nose, too.
Yes. Yeah, but who was it? That was Bob Hope has the ski one.
Ski nose. A good-looking nose.
Once again, you left me at a loss for words. Mm. Well, you know, right now we have Ryan, which is calling in from Placentia on Comcast. Good evening, Ryan.
Hello, Don. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to say thanks for taking my call because I've called, this is my second time in a couple of months to call you, and I don't know if you remember me last time, but couldn't get your name straight.
Oh, you did.
But
you,
I figured it out now, so.
Did you put a T on it?
I'm sorry?
Did you put a T on it?
No. I don't know what I called you. I was just so nervous that I was actually on the air with you. But just want to say thank you, and I am doubly honored to happen to be tuning into the show to hear the dulcet tones of Dwight Schultz. I can't believe it.
Well, you're very kind.
Thank you. I was sitting here listening, and Don, I always come in late, and I don't know who the heck Don is talking to, and I kept listening to his voice. I thought, man, this guy is really out of his mind. And then it dawned on me, oh, okay, it sounds like Dwight Schultz, because then he went into your little thing. So anyway, I just wanted to say thanks for
listening. Once, known as Howling Mad Murdoch.
That's right. Anyway, I do have a couple of points to make, and I hope you give me a couple of minutes to make it. I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will do that.
Okay.
But we are right now at the top of the hour.
Top of the hour break. Okay.
Got to take that.
Can I wait?
Can I put you on hold?
Absolutely. I'll wait.
It'll work.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
My name is Don Ecker. The show UFOs Tonight. You are listening to the Cable Radio Network. Joining me tonight in studio is my guest, Mr. Dwight Schultz, star from the screen Little and Big, and he is in here talking about your favorite subject, UFOs. As soon as we get back, we're going to have more of the show. If you'd like to be a part of it, well, you know the phone number is 818-352.
Small star.
You got it. We'll be back after this.
CRN, the Cable Radio Network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners. CRN does not endorse or object to any topics or views discussed in the program.